David was a great warrior and strategist, but he was also a man of compassion, and that was demonstrated by his treatment of Mephibosheth.
Welcome to Mission 66 from the ministry of Pastor Luis Seau and Transworld Radio. Today, we're diving into 2 Samuel, King David's triumphs, struggles, and lessons in faith, leadership, and God's guidance. Grab your study guide at mission66.org and follow along with John Matthews and Esther Sisulu as we discover how these timeless stories speak into our lives today. Let's get started.
It's great to be with you today as we come to 2 Samuel chapters 8 through 10. You know, Israel never had it better than in the days of King David. You know, he was the one who captured the city of Jerusalem from the Jebusites and through military conquest expanded Israel's territory in almost every direction. You know, he was the one with whom God made the eternal covenant. What an honor to be in that place. Well, our teacher, John Matthews, will lead us in today's episode with the theme, Leadership, Loyalty, and Divine Favor.
Esther, thank you so much, and a very warm welcome to Mission 66. As always, so good to be with you and have your company. So welcome along as we journey through this book of life together. And we don't say that glibly because this book is alive. It tells us where we've come from. It tells us who we are. It tells us what the future holds. The entire book has the creator and savior of the human race at its center. That is the Son of God, Jesus Christ, sent by his Father. He who lived a perfect life right here on this very earth that we now inhabit. And then he died in our place and took the punishment for all of our sins so that we could be set free from the judgment that hangs over us because of those sins, forgiven, forever forgiven. And the ask of us is to recognize our own hearts and see that we need forgiveness. That's the point we need to get to. We can't accept forgiveness until we get there, and that we need saving. We need somebody to save us. And so he awaits with open arms. All who come to him and commit their lives to him, wherein is the only freedom and peace that enables us to fill that God-shaped hole in the lives of every single person ever born on this earth. A hole that appears the moment that sin enters the world in the Garden of Eden, a hole that cannot be filled by any other than Jesus. And when you accept him, you know that you are home and that you're heading towards an eternity with him, an eternity where his love and his presence will be yours forevermore. And if you've been journeying with us through the Old Testament, well, we witness a man who understood that message. He was a man who was described as having a heart after God's very own heart. Talking about King David, who is, or has been, on a rise, a rapid rise. His heart and his approach to God had enabled God to use him well. So, what had happened? Well, he had experienced political victories, profound spiritual growth, and now we get a sense of his military success as we read 2 Samuel chapter 8, and this is what it says. After this, David defeated the Philistines and subdued them. And David took Methag-Ammah out of the hand of the Philistines, and he defeated Moab, and he measured them with a line, making them lie down on the ground. Two lines he measured to be put to death, and one full line to be spared. And the Moabites became servants to David, and brought tribute. David also defeated Hadarezer, the son of Rehob, king of Zobah, as he went to restore his power at the river Euphrates. And David took from him 1,700 horsemen and 20,000 foot soldiers. And David hamstrung all the chariot horses, but left enough for 100 chariots. And when the Syrians of Damascus came to help Hadarezer, king of Zoab, David struck down 22,000 men of the Syrians. The hamstringing the horses meant that they would cut the tendons on their legs, which would render them useless in battle, and David's army at this point certainly seems unstoppable. Verse 6, then David put garrisons in Aram of Damascus, and the Syrians became servants to David, and they brought tribute. And the Lord gave victory to David wherever he went. And David took the shields of gold that were carried by the servants of Hadarezer and brought them to Jerusalem. And when Toi, king of Hamath, heard that David had defeated the whole army of Hadarezer, Toi sent his son Joram to King David to ask about his health and to bless him because he had fought against Hadarezer and defeated him. For Hadarezer had often been at war with Toi. And Joram brought with him articles of silver, of gold, and of bronze. And these also King David dedicated to the Lord, together with the silver and the gold that he dedicated from all the nations he had subdued, from Edom, Moab, the Ammonites, the Philistines, Amalek, from the spoil of Hadarezer, the son of Rehob, king of Zobah. And David made a name for himself when he returned from striking down 18,000 Edomites in the Valley of Salt. And then he put garrisons in Edom. Throughout all Edom he put garrisons, and all the Edomites became David's servants. And the Lord gave victory to David wherever he went. So David reigned over all Israel, and David administered justice and equity to all his people. Joab, the son of Zeruiah, was over the army, and Jehoshaphat, the son of Ahilud, was recorder, and Zadok, the son of Ahitub, and Ahimelech, the son of Abiathar, were priests, and Seraiah was secretary, and Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, was over the Cherethites and the Pelethites, and David's sons were priests. Now Joab, David's main army general, was actually one of his nephews, the son of his sister Zeruiah. Now in chapter 9 then, we now find the story of Mephibosheth, who was the grandson of Saul, and he had been crippled as a result of an accident. Let's read 2 Samuel chapter 9, where it says, David said, "Is there still anyone left of the house of Saul, that I may show him kindness for Jonathan's sake?" Remember Jonathan, Saul's son, who'd been such a good friend of David's, but who had lost his life in battle. And verse 2 tells us that there was a servant of the house of Saul, and his name was Ziba. And they called him to David, and the king said to him, "Are you Ziba?" And he replied, "I am your servant." And the king said, "Is there not still someone of the house of Saul that I may show the kindness of God to him?" And Ziba said to the king, "There is still a son of Jonathan. He is crippled in his feet." And the king said to him, "Where is he?" And Ziba replied to the king, "He is in the house of Machir, the son of Amiel, at Lodebar." Then King David sent and brought him from the house of Machir, the son of Amiel, at Lodebar. And Mephibosheth, the son of Jonathan, son of Saul, came to David and fell on his face and paid homage. And David said, "Mephibosheth," and he answered, "Behold, I am your servant." And David said to him, "Do not fear, for I will show you kindness for the sake of your father Jonathan, and I will restore to you all the land of Saul and you shall eat at my table always. And Mephibosheth paid homage and said, what is your servant that you should show regard for a dead dog such as I? Then the king called Ziba, Saul's servant, and said to him, all that belonged to Saul and to all his house I have given to your master's grandson, and you and your sons and your servants shall till the land for him, and shall bring in the produce that your master's grandson may have bread to eat. But Mephibosheth, your master's grandson, shall always eat at my table. Now Ziba had 15 sons and 20 servants. Then Ziba said to the king, according to all that my lord the king commands his servant, so will your servant do. So Mephibosheth ate at David's table like one of the king's sons. And Mephibosheth had a young son whose name was Micah, and all who lived in Ziba's house became Mephibosheth's servants. So Mephibosheth lived in Jerusalem, and he ate always at the king's table. Now he was lame in both his feet. In other words, King David here shows kindness to a member of Saul's family for the sake of his close friend Jonathan. And then in chapter 10, we find David still seeking to be generous, but being misunderstood here. Let's read 2 Samuel 10 from verse 1. After this, the king of the Ammonites died, and Hanun his son reigned in his place. And David said, I will deal loyally with Hanun the son of Nahash, as his father dealt loyally with me. So David sent by his servants to console him concerning his father, and David's servants came into the land of the Ammonites. But the princes of the Ammonites said to Hanun their lord, do you think because David has sent comforters to you that he is honouring your father? Has not David sent his servants to you to search the city and to spy it out and to overthrow it? So Hanun took David's servants and shaved off half the beard of each and cut off their garments in the middle at the hips and sent them away. When it was told David, he sent to meet them, for the men were greatly ashamed. And the king said, remain at Jericho until your beards have grown, and then return. When the Ammonites saw that they had become a stench to David, the Ammonites sent and hired the Syrians of Beth Rehob and the Syrians of Zobah, 20,000 foot soldiers, and the king of Makkah with 1,000 men, and the men of Tob, 12,000 men. And when David heard of it, he sent Joab and all the host of the mighty men. And the Ammonites came out and drew up in battle array at the entrance of the gate, and the Syrians of Zobah and of Rehob and the men of Tob and Makkah were by themselves in the open country. And when Joab saw that the battle was set against him both in front and in the rear, he chose some of the best men of Israel and arrayed them against the Syrians. The rest of his men he put in charge of Abishai his brother, and he arrayed them against the Ammonites. And he said, if the Syrians are too strong for me, then you shall help me. But if the Ammonites are too strong for you, then I will come and help you. Be of good courage, and let us be courageous for our people and for the cities of our God. And may the Lord do what seems good to him. So Joab and the people who were with him drew near to battle against the Syrians, and they fled before him. And when the Ammonites saw that the Syrians fled, they likewise fled before Abishai and entered the city. Then Joab returned from fighting against the Ammonites and came to Jerusalem. But when the Syrians saw that they had been defeated by Israel, they gathered themselves together. And Hadad-Ezer sent and brought out the Syrians who were beyond the Euphrates. They came to Helam with Shobak, the commander of the army of Hadad-Ezer, at their head. And when it was told to David, he gathered all Israel together and crossed the Jordan and came to Helam. And the Syrians arrayed themselves against David and fought with him. And the Syrians fled before Israel. And David killed off the Syrians, the men of 700 chariots and 40,000 horsemen, and wounded Shobak, the commander of their army, so that he died there. And when all the kings who were servants of Hadadezer saw that they had been defeated by Israel, they made peace with Israel and became subject to them. So the Syrians were afraid to save the Ammonites any more. And what I think is striking, Esther, about these victories is that they will usher in this period of peace for David, who clearly has God's favour on all sides and indeed God's presence with him. And by way of gratitude, David dedicates the spoils of past wars to God, and he extends the offer of peace to those around them as long as they want it. And here we have David, the great warrior and strategist, but he's also, more importantly than that, a man of compassion, as demonstrated by his treatment of Mephibosheth.
You're listening to Mission 66, and we're here with our teacher, John Matthews. I'm Esther, and as usual, we're going to take a few minutes for questions about what we've just read. But I can imagine that perhaps a question or two has arisen for you too, dear friend, based off of what we've read. So please feel free to leave your comment or your question on Facebook and on Instagram. Find us today at Mission 66. All right, John, let's have a look at chapter 8, because here it says that David's sons appear as priests. I don't know. To me, that doesn't quite make sense. How is it that his sons are priests?
Yeah, it's a really good spot, Esther. And literally here, the word priests in Hebrew is the word kohen. And the most likely interpretation is that the intended meaning is royal advisors, like people who acted as ministers. That would be the most accurate contextual meaning of the term, which makes more sense because there's no evidence to suggest that David's sons were priests in the traditional sense of the word.
Okay, interesting. Interestingly, too, you mentioned that during this time, it was a time of peace for David and his people. But in reading the text, I mean, it just seems like there is battle after battle. What's that about?
Well, I think it's a time of comparative peace compared to what had gone before and indeed what was to come after. You know, there's never been a time when there was an absence of all war. But David, as we know, had to establish, stabilize his kingdom. And these wars, in a sense, were preemptive measures to bring about some days of peace and stability. And compared to Saul's kingdom that had preceded it, David was now about 3 to 4 times larger. And he was having to deal with longtime enemies of Israel, the Edomites, the Moabites, the Ammonites. They were located to the south and the east of the Jordan River, and they had constantly been a thorn in Israel's side. But David managed to subdue them, and that established Israel's dominance and the expansion as well of its territory. Some of the neighbours around Israel, it seems, would fight at the drop of a hat. Take, for example, this situation with the Ammonites. So David sends messengers to offer this condolence because their king had died, but they don't trust the guys bringing this message of condolence. They think, now they're spies, so they humiliate them. I wonder what they thought David's reaction to that would be. And, well, look, clearly they anticipated war. They raised together an army. And so it almost seems like they wanted war, or they were bristling for conflict. David also manages to weaken the Aramaeans, who were the ancient Syrians living in the region of modern-day Syria. And to give you an idea about this, then, David's kingdom was about 5 times bigger than modern-day Israel. And later, his son Solomon, David's son Solomon, would extend Israel's reach further still when it would include territory near the Euphrates River.
So I suppose then we could say that David's wars were due to provocation. He was responding in self-defense.
Well, he would have understood the passages of the first five books of the Bible when God had been very clear in saying that Israel needed to clear away those who were in that land and the influence that would come with them, and they didn't. So he knew, David, that in order to establish peace and stability in his territory, this was required, and he succeeded, partly because, unlike today, there were no major international superpowers complicating the situation. But most importantly, the Bible emphasizes that God was with David. He grants him victory over his enemies. He brings peace to the land of Israel. And do you know what, Esther? That is an absolute blueprint of what he can do in your heart as you listen to Mission 66 today. He can grant you victory over those things, those sins that dog you, that pull you down, that are ever present. And he can bring peace to your heart. He can enable you not to gain total victory over those sins so they never appear. That's not life on earth. But certainly a complete reordering of the situation in your heart and your life. And, you know, David, this included what he was doing physically in the land of Israel, included subduing the Philistines. We knew that they had been a long time thorn in Israel's side. And the only nearby group that actually maintained a peaceful relationship with Israel were the Phoenicians, as seen in his alliance with King Hiram of Tyre.
You know, John, it's interesting how we see King David in many aspects, in that he is a strategist. We see him as a warrior king. But the reality, especially when looking at that latter part, we don't see him in that capacity at all times, because we see him showing this compassion, right? This merciful side of himself towards Jonathan's son. My wonder here is, what do you think his interest was in Mephibosheth? Why was he reaching out to Saul's grandson?
Well, it's very clear, isn't it, Esther, that he had that special friendship with Jonathan, and his heart is one of looking at others, looking at trying to help others. And that's his nature, David. We get that. And so here he wants to do something in the honor of Jonathan. And when David inquires about the remnants of Saul's family, he's demonstrating mercy, benevolence, a grace, and indeed loyalty, all things that kings that were to follow were not going to show. And certainly he didn't need to show them. They weren't required of him at all. But then we think about his heart. Remember whose heart? His heart is in the image of. It's a heart after God's own heart. It's the same kind of covenantal love, in fact, that God shows to Israel. And now David is simply showing that. He's passing that on. And so David's mercy here towards Mephibosheth, it's a sign of compassion. It's also a sign of good leadership. He leads with heart. He leads with wisdom. He leads with love. And it also mirrors God's heart towards a lost world. In a way, we're all like Mephibosheth, hampered so that we can't walk in the way that we should and would like to do in the world, perhaps. We stumble, we fall. But God, in his mercy, reaches down to us. And if we respond to his invitation to believe what he offers and gives us freely, he takes us in. He treats us as sons, as part of his family, as daughters. Invites us into his very presence to dwell, to live in his presence. You might say, to eat at his table.
I love that. I love that. All right. Well, you know, chapter 8 gives us this list of a group of people that are working with David. What's the significance of this list?
Did you just want to get me to say all those pronunciations again? Did you want just to keep me on my toes? That was what it was all about, isn't it?
You know me too well.
What are the chances of me? I'll try to answer this without making without my teeth falling out, but I'll give, you know, but if they do, they do. So here we go. Well, look, in answer to the question, the significance of the list, it's kind of like his cabinet or his presidential cabinet or something like that, right? So you've got Joab, the commander of the army. He's a loyal ally, besides being his nephew as well. Jehoshaphat served as the royal archivists, meticulously maintaining the records. You've got Zadok and Abiathar, who were priests who'd been loyal to David from way back, from years back. Then there's Sariah, who is the secretary. Benaiah commanded the Cherethites and the Pelethites, who were also actually connected to David's administration. So there you go, a spiritual leader, isn't it, who fears the Lord, but he's also an organized leader. And David's success stems, yes, from the military strength, his relationship with God, fundamentally. That's where his military success came from, but also his virtue and wisdom in walking this journey step by step by step with God. And clearly, he was a gifted administrator. Now, today, some people think you can only have perhaps one quality or another. Either you have a compassionate heart or you're a strong organizer. And we sometimes divide people, maybe because that sort of is easier for us to do. We say, well, hey, that's the left side of their brain, or that's the right side of their brain. But look, God gives us a whole brain. So let's not let ourselves off the hook and sell ourselves short of what God has put in us potentially, because we, I think many of us have potential to do far more than we do, or we belittle ourselves. Maybe that's been part of our story. That's not what God does. God says, with my strength in you, you can be more than conquerors. Go on. You know, I'm with you. I'm in you. So there you go. It's that God sees us with so much potential in a way that we don't even see ourselves.
By the way, kudos to you for the pronunciation of those names. I'm giving you a virtual round of applause. That was really good. Well, John, you know what? We've now come to that part of the show where we're going to have a look at a summary of this chapter that we've just read.
What people don't realize, Esther, is that my bottom set of teeth fell out, but that's fine. Pop them back in. Nobody needs to know. That's fine. So then, yeah, today on Mission 66, we're looking at war and peace, really, weren't we, in chapters 8 to 10 of 2 Samuel, to summarize it, because there were chapters that highlighted King David's military victories, as well as his justice as a ruler, plus his act of kindness. And you might not have expected that after military victories, justice as ruler, to be the thing that actually underpins what he does, acts of kindness. There's a roundedness, isn't there, to the way that David rules. And so, yes, he defeats numerous enemies. They include the Philistines, the Moabites, the Edomites, the Syrians, the Ammonites. And Israel's territory is expanded. And, of course, with that comes influence. And he subdues other nations such as Zobah and Damascus. And he collects tribute and he dedicates the spoils of war to God. And the text emphasizes on two occasions, let's put this in bold and underline it, right? Throughout David's reign, throughout any of our lives where God can do good things through us, that the Lord gave victory to David wherever he went. Why? Because he loved God and he wanted to obey God. And David demonstrates this wonderful compassion by seeking out, by really taking the initiative, not thinking, if kindness comes my way, I'll show it to somebody. No, he goes and seeks out Jonathan's son, Mephibosheth, who is lame as a result of an accident. And for the sake of his covenant with his friend Jonathan, David restores Saul's land. That's Saul, remember? All those months and years that Saul tried to catch and kill David. Well, now, as an act of kindness to Saul's grandson, he restores that land to Mephibosheth, ensuring that Mephibosheth not only has all this land restored, but that he eats at the king's table as one of the family. And so there is David's loyalty, his kindness towards the house of Saul. There wasn't much kindness coming from Saul towards David, that's for sure, in those late years, far from it. But David repays conflict, repays hate with kindness and compassion. And in another account, David attempts to console Hanan. This is the new king of Ammon, whose father had died. But Hanan actually distrusts, on the basis of how he's advised, the intentions of David's messenger. So he sends them home packing with half of their beards cut off. Well, that leads to a war during which David's forces, led by Joab, decisively defeats the Ammonites and indeed their Syrian allies. And that solidifies his reign over Israel, demonstrating his role as both a warrior king but a just ruler. Now, here's an interesting question just before we round off today. If you could be anyone, Esther, who would you want to be? Some of us might read the story of David, and if we're honest, we might have thought to ourselves or prayed to God, why wasn't I born David? Or why wasn't I born more like David? Well, look, that's not the way God thinks. God made you as you. If he wanted you to be like David, he would have made you like David. No. God needed you. He needed someone just like you. You don't believe me? It's true. Fearfully and wonderfully made are you, because you're made in God's image. He gives you grace for every hour of your life if you ask him. His strength, the Bible tells us, is perfected in our weakness. He enables those whom he calls, and he calls every single one of us to him.
Well, thank you so much, John, for that wonderful encouragement. And to you, friend, thank you for the pleasure of your company. You know, Mission 66 is heard in several languages around the world, and we are so deeply grateful for your prayers and your financial support to continue this ministry globally. Friend, I would ask that you would prayerfully consider giving a gift to this ministry. And if you wish to do so, visit mission66.org. Well, of course, it's been a pleasure. And next time, we'll continue further into 2 Samuel. So from me, Esther, and John Matthews, and everybody on our team, saying, may the good Lord bless you and keep you, and may his promises bring you peace.
As we close today's program, take a minute to download your free study guide. You'll be able to follow along every single day. Plus, you can engage with the reflection and application questions so you can apply the teaching to your life. It's a great companion resource to the audio Bible teaching of John Matthews and Esther Sisulu. To get your free study guide, visit mission66.org. That's mission66.org. You can also support the ministry of Mission 66 when you visit the site. Your gift makes it possible for this great teaching to be heard in many languages around the world. Mission 66 is a ministry of Transworld Radio in partnership with Dr. Luis Seau.